You're welcome back. As we've been hearing, the Jesuits have named a further 15 order members who have been the subject of child sexual abuse complaints. All 15 are dead, but in 8 cases, complaints were made while they were still alive. In the report, which had just been published, the order admits that prior to 2002, their practice with regard to reporting complaints to Gardaí and the health boards was very poor. The 15 men named today are Father Rupert Coyle, who died in 1978, Father Sean Curran, who died in 1999, Father Brendan Carney, who died in 2014, Father John T. Kelly, he died in 1977, Father Patrick Kelly, who died in 2012, Father Kevin Laheen, who died in 2019, Father Henry, also known as Harry Lawler, who died in 1989. Father John A, or Jack Leonard, he died in 1992. Father Finbar Lynch, he died in 2022. Father Michael McGrath, he died in 1989. Father Oliver Joseph O'Brien, who died in 1994. Brother Edward O'Sullivan, who died in 1996. Father Dermot O'Pakeen, who died in 2008. Brother Douglas A. Pill, he died in 2003. And Father James Stevenson, he died in 1979. Now, in a few moments, we'll be hearing from the Jesuit Provincial Father Shane Daly. But first, our social affairs and religion correspondent, Alva Keneally, has been reading this report. As I say, Alva, it's just been published. How did it come about?
Well, the examination really goes back to March 2021 when the Jesuit Order published the name of the Jesuit priest Joseph Marmion after a former pupil who was abused by Marmion at the age of 13 at Belvedere College during the 70s. He pressed the order to name his abuser because he was concerned for others that may have been abused. Essentially, he wanted to help them come forward. So at that stage, the Jesuits encouraged others who may have suffered sexual or emotional or physical abuse to come forward. Then by March last year, the order had received 93 complaints of sexual, physical and emotional abuse of boys by the former priest. And, he was a teacher as well, Joseph Marmion. And then there were 34 complaints of sexual abuse received against 19 other Jesuits at that stage at 3 schools. And it named 2 deceased members last year, Father Paul Andrews, who'd been a rector at Belvedere College for a time, and Father Dermot Casey, who was Andrews' predecessor as a director of Belvedere, and he also worked at St. Declan's School for Children with Additional Needs. So the order set up this independent working group to see if others could be named, and that's what we're seeing here today.
So how was it decided then, Alva, that these 15 would be named? Because, as you say, complaints have also been made against others.
Yeah, so the independent working group, it consisted of 3 people, including a former judge of the Supreme Court, a psychotherapist and a social worker. They looked at the files of 37 deceased Jesuits to see if they met the criteria to be publicly named, a high threshold in fairness, but they decided on 14, but the Jesuits added in the 15th after later information became available.
Now, I named all 15 a few moments ago, but we're going to look in more detail at 4 men. Tell us about them. You're starting with Shane Curran.
Yes. He died in 1999 and the order received 18 child sexual abuse complaints against him and 2 complaints from third parties. 4 of these complaints and the complaints from the third parties were received during his lifetime. None of the complaints were reported to the Gardaí at the time. The report found he was not held to account in any meaningful way in relation to child sexual abuse, although a complaint was made against him when he was teaching in Mungret College in 1970. The provincial removed him from Mungret College to Milltown Park, and there's no record of what other action was taken, if any, to address this complaint. And then, a second one we were going to look at was Father John T. Kelly. There were 5 complaints of sexual abuse made against him relating to his time at Mungret College in Limerick. The abuse spanned from the period of 1940 to 1955. Father Kelly was spoken to about the complaints in 1956 by the provincial, which he didn't deny. He was dismissed from the Jesuit order, but he went on to work as a priest in a Canadian diocese. But information about his behaviour was shared by the order with the diocese at the time. Yeah.
Another one on the list. And I think in this case that we're talking about more recent allegations, the man in question here, Father Patrick Kelly, who died in 2012. Tell us about him.
Yeah, this is an interesting one because there was 5 complaints of child sexual abuse made to the order against Father Patrick Kelly. And all complaints relate to his time in the USA during the 70s, 80s and early 90s. Now, these complaints were first made in the USA because there was a number of concerns by third party that other children may have been abused by him there. Then he was working in New York in 1988 and he was notified by the Bishop of Rockville Centre that complaints of child sexual abuse had been made against Father Kelly, and the Bishop terminated his appointment. But he was allowed then by the Irish Provincial to go work in Our Lady of Lourdes Church in Los Angeles in California. And there's no indication of a history of complaint at the diocese in New York, that was notified to the diocese in LA. So in 91, a warrant for Kelly's arrest, Father Kelly's arrest, was issued in Los Angeles regarding a child sexual complaint made against him in the course of his ministry there. So Father Kelly returned to Ireland on foot of the charge, and thereafter from Ireland, he entered a no contest plea. His sentence included the requirement that he stay out of California, but he was permitted by the Irish Provincial to minister in Gardiner Street Parish in Dublin.
And as you say, this was in the 1990s, and then he moved on to Limerick and he died in 2012. Father Finbar Lynch is the last name you're going to tell us a little more about. Who was he, Alpha?
Yeah, so there were 2 child sexual abuse complaints against Father Finbar Lynch relating to his time in Belvedere College in Dublin. These complaints were received in 2021 and 2022, so quite recent, and they were reported to Gardaí and Tuzla. 2 complaints of physical abuse were also received by the order. He was required to step away from public ministry on receipt of the complaint in 21 and not to have supervised contact with minors. In 2021, the complainant also made their complaint to the Gardaí. This resulted in an investigation. The DPP initiated a prosecution against Father Lynch on a charge of indecent assault, but Father Lynch died before the trial could take place.
Alva, thank you very much. That was our religion and social affairs correspondent, Alva Keneally. And as Alva was saying, one thing that stands out in this report is how much of the abuse was avoidable. Complaints were made and little was done. Father Shane Daly is the Jesuit provincial. I asked him why this approach had been taken.
So of the list of people we're publishing today, we know that there were at least eight individuals whom we were aware of the abuse in their lifetime and quite early on in their career. And we followed a pattern of simply when we became aware, and indeed in cases where the individuals acknowledged that abuse, they were simply moved on to another location, onto another ministry. Families weren't informed, authorities weren't informed, indeed local superiors and fellow Jesuits weren't informed of these behaviours that these individuals were alleged to have committed, and which had been admitted in some of those cases.
But why?
I suppose it was partly the sense of protecting the institution. Protecting the good name of the individual seems to have been key in our response over many decades, that we wanted to protect the man, we wanted to protect the name of the institution, perhaps the name of our schools and where much of this abuse occurred. And we did not take consideration of the children who had been harmed.
One of the striking things, though, is that several of these cases, they don't relate to the dim and distant past. If we take the case of one man in particular, Father Patrick Kelly, he went from New York to California and then to Gardiner Street in Dublin and then to Limerick. Now, those Irish ministries were in the 1990s, and in the 1990s, everyone knew about the seriousness of child abuse.
Yes, it is shocking to think that when Father Kelly's abuse was made known to the provincial in 1988 by the bishop, a bishop in America where he was working, that he was allowed to go on to the west coast of America without even being brought home and questioned in relation to that. And again, it is shocking that we did not inform the authorities in the west coast that these allegations had been made. when Father Kelly was brought home, or when further allegations were made and Father Kelly was then charged in the US court and returned to Ireland, it was effectively kept quiet. Nobody was informed. He was moved to Gardiner Street and eventually he was put on restricted ministry. But on being moved to Limerick, the local superior there was not informed that he had been on restricted ministry.
This is going to be particularly shocking news for many people who would have known him in Gardiner Street or in Limerick.
Yes, I mean, there's nothing to defend here in this action, the way Father Kelly's case was handled, except to admit now that we were totally cavalier in how we dealt with him.
There were other similar cases like Father Henry or Harry Lawler. Again, is it known why men weren't removed from public ministry sooner?
I think it falls back on the sense that felt the need to protect the institution. We felt the need to protect these individuals' good name. And if we were to deal with it in any adequate way, that might, of course, become a much more public thing then.
Having named these 15 men, and their names are on your website, they're in the report, do you expect that other victims might come forward?
We hope other victims will come forward. The purpose of this naming exercise is to encourage people to come forward, not simply people who were harmed by these 15 individuals, but anybody who was harmed by a Jesuit, anybody who had an abusive encounter at the hands of a Jesuit. We want them to come forward. We want to try and make amends for the awful failings on our very poor handling of events, more historically, when there were children, when those events were known to us and we didn't act.
And when you say make amends, what does that mean? Will you be offering financial redress?
So the Safeguarding Office have a range of options to help people who come forward, including financial redress through a redress scheme. We also have a veil of external counselling, which we fund. There's the opportunity through a restorative process to work with the Safeguarding Office, and also to meet people in the order who they might want to meet and have their experience validated.
And are many people availing of those services at the moment?
So when we named two individuals last year in light of the publication of the report into the abusive activities of Joseph Marmion, in that last year, we have had 70 new contacts to the Safeguarding Office, some involving those whom we named publicly last year, some continuing on from the naming of Joseph Marmion back in March 2021, but also about 40 new encounters of people who've come forward, some of whom deepen our awareness and understanding of those individuals we named, some whom we're not naming, but also new people not known to us previously with allegations of CSA. So that's, we feel, is a very good response from the act of naming, that naming does empower people to come forward.
Have you met them?
I have met a number of victims.
And what have they said to you?
So they've expressed a range of experiences and emotions, from anger and hurt to disappointment, to shock, particularly shock at when they understand how poorly we handled the allegations when they were known to us. But I've also experienced in those encounters incredible moments of generosity from people. And it's very humbling for me in the situation I am to receive that from people who come to me.
As of today, 15 further names are in the public domain. Is there a possibility that you will go on to name others?
So the working group who came up with 14 of the names and we added a 15th name were very clear that this is an interim measure, that they were basically handing the work back to us now and saying we had to continue on. We had to go back to people whom we were in contact with, get more information on their experience, gather more evidence about the abuse for the purpose of naming, not for the purpose of believing their story. We believe all the people, whether or not we have actually named their abuser or not today. So we're challenged with that responsibility now to continue this work. And so we do believe that we will be naming others into the future.
So the process continues then?
The process continues. It may not be as dramatic in some sense as publishing 15 names in a given day. It may well be that it's a continuous publication of names as we become confident that we can safely put those names into the public domain, conscious that when we do name them publicly, we are ascribing guilt to their actions.
And in every case, is the person at the heart of it, are they dead?
Yes. So all the cases that the standing, that the working group reviewed, the individual deceased, those who are alive are subject to the ordinary processes of the state, the legal processes and canonical processes.
The Jesuit Provincial Father Shane Daly, and there is, by the way, one living Jesuit currently out of ministry as a result of a legal process. If you've been affected by what you've heard and you'd like to contact the Jesuit helpline number, that number is 083-087-4254. That's 083-087-4254. Or you can email safeguarding@jesuit.ie. Alternatively, there are support lines available on rte.ie/helplines.